This is the Gospel Revolution.
Since you're knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wildness been knocking from within. You are the love you seek, a perfect gift you need, righteous and holy.
Here's the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams.
Thank you, Daniel Thomas Rouse, for that wonderful welcome, and hello, GRs.
You know, isn't it amazing to think that people all over the world are listening to us right now, Michael?
It really is. I've always been just really impacted by that. I remember when I was on 700 Club and they told me like 20 something million people were watching at the time. And I just thought, you know, that was right before we started the interview. And I thought, you could have kept that information to yourself. I don't know if they like to watch people squirm in their seats or what. But anyway, those numbers, you know, the greatest sitcoms and things on TV now don't get those numbers because there's just too much choice out there. So, yes, I did do a show where I think it was in the 20s. I can't tell you what, but 20-something million were watching at the time. They weren't talking about their repeat programming and things like that.
Wow.
Live at that moment.
Yeah, so all of you listeners, we know you have a plethora of choices. There are a lot of voices out there.
You do.
And we are just honored that you have chosen to listen to the Gospel Revolution. If you haven't seen yet, we also had a new publication that came out this past week that we are, you know, we're not supposed to be proud, but I'm very proud of it, Michael.
We are.
We published a religion-free version of 1 Corinthians chapter 1.
Yes, and we're going to continue that until we have our publication of the New Testament non-pseudographical writings. And it was amazing. I think the thing that shocked me, Daniel, the most was that even after removing the pseudographicals, we had the tentacles of the pseudographicals that reached back into chapter one to try to lace these together. We came up with that terminology when we were doing the revelation, and we could see this lacing that they did. You know, even just a verse or two here, and then enter a verse or two that was credibly being John, and then lace in something from the pseudographicals back into it. But once you've seen it, you've seen it. You can't unsee it once you've seen it either. And as we were progressing through that, it was just so obvious to see this exegesis. They had actually done a eisegesis of chapter one by inserting their thoughts from the pseudographicals. So, quite interesting. And oh my gosh, you talk about a wonderful, beautiful portrait, just 1 Corinthians alone. You could go all your life with nothing but 1 Corinthians and you would understand the gospel. It is just that clear. It's that powerful. And, we end up being more and more grateful to Paul for what he's done to try to help the planet understand this marvelous reconciliation. And yeah. And then, of course, then on Tuesday, I got to teach out of the religion-free Bible. And I got to read it. I had to go check, see what the verses were because, you know, the religion free does not have verses. And it's amazing. It did impact me. It impacted me in my ability to stick with the subject. And we don't find fault with the fact that there's verses there, except the fact that you should be able to read this text without those verses, because in many cases, it causes the thought process to stop because we know a verse. I mean, that's how we learned the Bible. We memorized this verse and that verse and something else and tied them all together to make a doctrine instead of reading in context what we had.
I was wondering, I watched you on that video on Tuesday, and I was wondering what you were feeling preaching 1 Corinthians in a very raw form. I mean, it was almost like, you know, perhaps as close as you could get to Paul actually handing you the letter himself.
Yeah.
Without it being touched or tainted over all the years.
It felt that way. It really, I was having a very profound experience. I was also having to maintain myself so I could actually do the teaching. But I was so impressed with Paul, with his beautiful way of comparing, as he did in 1 Corinthians, the power that the work of the cross does, and then also delineating that from the power of the preaching of that, regardless of what you say about it. And he just made it very clear that even his words, no matter how clear the words, no matter how accurate or inaccurate they are, those things cannot take away what God did in the body of Christ. A man who was born of a virgin and a man who took upon him the sin of the world. Oh, I hear mystics freaking out. And that he died for the sin of the world, for the transgression of the first Adam, the unbelief, and death, burial, and a resurrection from the dead. This was a man, remember, this man who rose from the dead was born of a virgin. Those two things, bookending the life and the prophetic life of Jesus Christ. By the way, both were prophesied. It's really weird how people go in and says, oh, that says made. Well, if you look at the vernacular of the time when that word was used, all you have to do is do a word etymology of it, and it will tell you the term made meant virgin. it is so amazing how people try to take the miraculous out of the cross so they can live miraculous lives today. I can't even hardly say it without just, it's nuts.
Yeah.
To be able to believe that Jesus gave them a parking space and Jesus is taking care of this and that. In fact, it's not Jesus. I don't think they even like Jesus. Father. It's what Father did. Father did this, and Father did that. Father did that, and Father this, and Father that. It's like Jesus somehow got in the way here. You know? And now that they've got Jesus out of the way, they've got a direct relationship with Father. And I don't think Paul saw it that way. In fact, I know Paul did not see it that way. I know that no writer in the New Testament, even those that disagreed with Paul, never saw it that way. So they did see things differently, and we can point out to people what those differences were, and they're very clear. It's just very, very clear what Peter, James, and John, and even Peter, James, and John had their own brand of Christianity, if you will. And James, his brand of Christianity was poverty Christianity. And then John's brand of Christianity was sin consciousness. And then Peter's brand was that Christ was supposed to have come and set up a Jewish kingdom. Therefore, he's still waiting for that. And a day is as a thousand years, a thousand years. He did every shuck and jive, twist and turn he could possibly do to still maintain the acceptance of the fact that this man is the one he walked with, but he didn't do what he thought he was going to do, but was still fully expecting that a second visit was going to bring about all of this. And then you have those three positions that are somewhat in agreement with each other that disagree wholeheartedly with Paul.
And our endeavor in producing this Bible, this New Testament, is to clean that all up. And I want to just say from my heart, and I think I'm speaking from Michael's as well, he can comment on it, But it's amazing as we have gone through this, and even a couple phone calls that we've had with different people involved in working on this, is we laughed about it because as we're translating and we're looking in the Greek and all that, we're not trying to find a bias that fits mm-hmm. the gospel revolution, you know, dogma. We're on it true, full-heartedly looking to see if we're wrong or anything like that. And, you know, if at the end of the day we go through this project and we find out that we're wrong, if I find mm-hmm. out that I'm wrong, I'll give it back. I'll go back, be a Word of Faith pastor again.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
If I find that to be the truth and that's really, and discover myself being wrong or any other stream of Christianity that seems to have it put together. And if that's there, I'm willing to go down that road if that's where the truth is. And that really is our heart in this project, is not to produce a Bible that all the GRs are going to go, oh, yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, we want to produce a New Testament that is pure truth, as close to pure truth as we can get it. That's our endeavor.
Mm-hmm. And anyone that says that we are doing anything other than that, Daniel, all they have to do is listen back over the last few months even. And how many times we've said, wow, look at this, we were wrong.
Mm-hmm, right.
Wow, look at this, we were wrong. The goal here is not to be right. It is, honestly, and I know it sounds weird, but our goal in the process is to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We want to prove ourselves wrong, because the last thing in the world you need when you're doing research, I don't care if it's scientific or the scriptures, you've got to find out where the material is, what's valid, what's not valid material. And then as you go through that, if you do have a bias one way or the other, and we obviously have a persuasion, I don't think it's a bias. What we do is try to keep biases out of our persuasion,
mm-hmm.
and that there are things that can be true along with. It's kind of like this. So, like, I was having a brief text with Lisa again, and she's attentive. And she told me, she said, Mike says, I think there's another way of looking at this. And she wasn't like male. She didn't just say, you're wrong.
A little more diplomatic.
She said, I think there's another way of looking at this. When I said that God was unfair, he was unfair because it was unfair to impute sin. It was unfair, 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 unfair. And then I went, of course, to the opposite. It was not fair. It wasn't fair of God at all to make all righteous and unfair that of the grace. And she said, actually, if you look at both of those at the same time, you'd have to say God is fair.
Mm.
And it's like, well, thank you, ma'am. I know that what I said in the context of just strictly the old covenant by itself, there is unfairness mm-hmm. there. But it is by the degree of that unfairness, the very same degree, and we have to say even more so, to the side of what God has done through his grace has been done on this side. He's been more unfair with his grace than he was with his law. Because this is just ridiculously unfair what he has done for us. Oh, what he's done for the whole human race. So ridiculously unfair. There's verses that actually say that. And the superabundance, the words hupo and sum this togetherness of it, that has done it for everybody all at once in a absolutely over the top arche hupo, all of these Greek words that begin to come alive for us. So she was correct in that when you compare them to one another, there's a balance of fairness there.
Mm.
He was fair in that he was unfair, and he was fair in that he was unfair.
Wow.
And only God could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm either fair or unfair. I'm not both the same.
Oh, I just love what's happening here at the Gospel Revolution, Michael. I hope those of you who are listening and watching and reading. And I hope you're subscribed to the newsletter. If not, go to gospelrevolution.com and subscribe. I hope you're following us on Facebook and Instagram, YouTube, all those places where we publish all this content. We got the newest chapter one is out already. Chapter two is coming out very, very shortly. So watch your inbox, watch for the announcement coming out for that. Chapter two will be there before you know it. We're already working on it, and it should be coming to you very quickly. And then before you know it, chapter three. And then we found out that all the way between there and chapter 15, we're pseudographical. And when we put this together, you're going to be like, oh, man.
It is unbelievable how disconnected chapter 3 is from chapter 4 through 14. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3 have nothing in common or relative. Or in fact, it's like, okay, we're going to change the whole subject now and start pointing out all the faults of what we just told you about. Mm-hmm. And then to pick up with chapter 15, there's only one place that chapter 15 can start, and that's right after chapter 3.
Yeah.
There is no other place for it. And once you see it in place, you're going to be really amazed. We've already done that for ourselves, and we're looking forward to doing that. And I thought we would be able to, Daniel, take away the pseudographicals and just publish it that way first. But once we got into it, we saw, my gosh, there's so much pseudographical influence mm-hmm. that we really are going to have to translate this. And we did a word for word and thought for thought. We have worked very diligently not to insert any of our ideas into this, but make sure these were all things that Paul had already stated. We simply restated some of the things that Paul stated for the clarity of the reader who has had their thoughts interrupted by all these other guys. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing that we did is to make sure that the statements that Paul had made was restated for clarification.
So stay tuned, folks. There's more coming. Hope you're enjoying it. If you haven't seen it yet, you can go to Gospel Revolution right on the front page and look at recent articles, and you will see chapter one posted right there on our home screen, or you can hit read and look at recent articles there, and you will find the most recent. Of course, if you're subscribed to the newsletter, you would already have it in your email box. So don't miss out.
Also, Daniel, I want to update people, and you can probably give the most accurate update. Ethan started the ball rolling on integrating our website with AI, artificial intelligence. This is going to be, as far as I can tell, there's no other ministry that has AI integrated into their platforms yet. And what this does, I know you're feeling AI coming in and taking over your life already because it's already popping up. I'm here. You want to use me? I'm here. I'm your servant. I can do this for you if you want me to. But for people that don't like change, they're gonna click off of that real quick. But AI really is a transforming ability to assimilate information and to lay that out so very succinctly. It is costing us money to do this. Remember back when we did our pledge drive, we asked you to increase your giving. Those are the things that we needed to do. We didn't get enough to do some of the things that we had planned on doing. We are going to upgrade office space, but we're not going to be able to do what we wanted to do. We are going to be able to have a studio, but not to the degree that we wanted the studio. But one of the things that we are going to be able to do is we've already employed this individual who has this company who integrates websites into AI. And now this is all happening between the ears of Ethan and Daniel And what is the gentleman's name? I can't remember.
Zane.
Zane. So Zane is the whiz bang guy on this, and he knows how. We've checked out his credentials, and we are paying him. So whatever you do, don't miss end of the month contribution, because we got to pay people. But this is going to be a very well worthwhile dollars spent to be able to get this. So what we're doing is we're not just placing AI in our website, but then we'll begin the process of through AI integrating our information into the public domain. That when somebody asks about what is the gospel revolution, well, if it's our information that has already been introduced to AI and all the rest of these guys are out there not doing this type of upgrade, then of course it will refer people to the gospel revolution and to Mike Williams Ministries and to all of these videos and everything, and the information will be coming from there.
Yeah, it's really amazing. As we started talking about it, one of the things that we're literally doing is creating a gospel brain. We have an artificial intelligent brain that we are creating that is specifically trained to think gospel.
Yeah,
that just sounds so cool. I love that.
I know.
And it's we are able to feed that brain the information that we want it to. And what you'll be able to do, how does this affect you, is you'll be able to go onto our website when this is done, and you'll be able to have a conversation, if you will, with this brain, ask questions and talk about the gospel. And it will harvest its answers from the videos and the content, everything that's on the website, everything that's on the website will feed into that brain. And you'll be able to ask questions about, you know, what about this verse or what about that verse? And that brain will be able to take that information and give you an answer. And Zane has told us that his experience in this has brought about a 90% accuracy rate, which is pretty cool to think about.
Yeah.
So the brain's answers are going to be about 90% accurate based on the information that we fed it.
Better than my brain. And here's one of the other cool aspects of it. Is right now, the only thing you can do is go listen to a whole hour and a half on a title or something like that. But I hope that you get as excited about this as we are, because you will never again have to listen to an entire session. Because if there's one particular part of the position and the teachings that we are getting together, and that's been there for all of these years, you can just ask about that one thing. You don't have to say, well, I think I have to listen to this to find that. AI's already listened to it for you.
Yeah.
And it will answer the questions for you as if it was an individual who has listened to all of these and can remember everything that it has heard.
What a wonderful world.
See, I can keep living to 150 with my brain dead, and got another brain going now.
Yeah, so this is a process that's happening. It's early stages. It'll take us some time to, they're implementing all the back end side of it now, and then we'll start feeding the brain the information. And once it has the information, there'll be some training that has to be done to the brain, if you will, and then then we'll integrate it to our website, where it'll be something that everyone will be able to use. So it's a big project, but it's going to be definitely worthwhile.
Yes. And it's going to be very well secured. So like, we're not going to suddenly have, you know, Jimmy Swaggart coming up on your responses or anything. So.
Yeah. It'll be on its own private server.
Yes.
Well, Michael, we are week six.
We are
into our series about the commandments and teachings of Christ. I'm just wowed. So far, all of these things, Michael, that I was raised as a little boy to be told, yeah, these are the teachings of Christ. These are the principles of life to follow, to live by.
Do them.
My group kind of steered away from the word command. It was a little strong for us grace people. but, you know, there were precepts or principles. You know, those were kind of the terms.
Oh,
but they,
yes,
were all the same thing. They were all the commandments of Christ. Do this and this will happen type of thing. And the thing that I have been amazed up to this point, Michael, is every single one of these commands that we have read from this particular website, who has gone through the teachings of Christ and put a list together of commandments and teachings, we have seen so far is Christ is the fulfillment, mm-hmm, of every single one of them. And if we try to put ourselves into the situation, we get the self-righteous condemnation mess that Christianity is full of. And instead of seeing the free gospel that's been delivered to all.
It is really quite amazing. I remember decades ago saying to people that if you ever want to lose all confidence that you're saved, follow the teachings of Jesus, or at least try.
Mm.
But accept them for what they say. Don't alter them as we tend to do. And I remember telling people the very obvious fact that this was all before the new covenant. All of this teaching took place by Jesus Christ, who was born in the valley of the shadow of death, who was destined to the cross. And still, even though he was born of the Spirit, he was not under the law because he was born of the Spirit, a total type and shadow of all of us coming up in the work of the cross. But he was born while the law was in effect. And so he had to teach these people to recognize the law. And I think to bring it to its conclusion, he had to teach on it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember coming to the realization that the very first person who ever clearly taught God's law was Jesus Christ himself.
Mm.
Moses gave the law, and after that, nobody taught on it correctly. Until Jesus came. So wouldn't it be just apropos that the one who taught on it correctly is the one who fulfilled it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so far, all of our teachings, except for the abiding in the vine, have come from this powerful teaching in Matthew 4, 5, 6, and 7, mm-hmm, which is really just Jesus. I mean, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is really hammering the law to the nth degree. Mm-hmm.
As they say today in motivational circles, he is crushing.
Which last week, Michael, we talked about honoring God's law and we were celebrating and we found, mm-hmm, great joy and great love in the law of God.
Yeah.
But not because it's something we follow or something we do or can do. Yeah. But rather in the fact that it qualified all of humanity for the wonderful grace of God.
Yeah, it qualified us by disqualifying, mm-hmm, us.
Exactly.
And that is Paul's euphoria, is in this one single revelation, the disqualification for the purpose of qualifying all.
Mm.
And that's what Paul was not, 1 Corinthians, that's what Paul was never going to let anybody away with, is trying to say that this qualification comes through whatever doctrine you happen to believe. And even his own doctrine, he even put his own doctrine up to the chopping block and said that none of this, if any of this is what makes righteousness true for today, then the cross has become of no effect. And we actually have people that we know who they are, and there's people who have listened to us that listen to them, and they have concluded, and they have no problem with the fact that the work of Christ simply was not necessary. They don't say it did nothing because they can't be that brazen about the lies that they're telling. And they are telling lies, Daniel,
mm-hmm,
about the work of the cross. The cross changed everything. And yes, Jesus was born of a virgin. And yes, Jesus did raise from the dead. And you won't hear them out front talking about those, but simply because they do not accept that Jesus Christ was born of a virgin. How could you say that the blood of Christ was the same as anybody else's blood when the one half of Jesus' blood was not produced by any descendant of Adam? Mm. Then, of course, the resurrection from the dead. Now, they can kind of tolerate the resurrection from the dead thing. I don't know how they skirt and dance around that at all. But the one thing that they are really adamant about is just the ha-ha hee-hees about a virgin birth. And I've listened to all of them. I remember all these guys back 20 and 30 years ago when I began to hear the rumblings of this. Richard Rohr does adamantly, a Catholic man who completely decries the virgin birth, mocks it. And there's others that have done that, and some very, really wonderful people have followed that. There was another guy that I was thinking of. I just can't bring his name to the front right now. One of the older guys that passed away just several years ago.
Was it Spurgeon or something like that?
No, you got real. Spawn. Bishop Spawn. Yes, thank you. You got there with the SP. And Bishop Spawn. And for some reason, he was able to infiltrate people's thinking and introduce the virgin birth as an illogical thing. And we agree, it is illogical. But without the virgin birth, there is no true transformation. But transformation was never needed. So none of this was necessary. And Father's always been sweet and kind. That's contrary to everything that the New Testament and the Old Testament says. The Hebrew scriptures and even the writings that we would deem as pseudographical, they at least know that part is correct. But people have really fallen to this, and we want you to understand that in the life of Christ, there are bookends to this. Now, the entire life of Christ is laid out in the Hebrew scriptures. And but the bookends of his life is a virgin conception and also a resurrection from the dead. That is his physical existence on this earth. Mm. And in those bookends is a revelation of the transforming power of actually what Jesus did changed God. Now, Carlton Pearson mocked me for saying that. And that God changed at the cross. But I didn't say God changed at the cross. Paul said God changed at the cross. It's part of reconciliation. When you're reconciled, it's just not one party that changes. Two have to work things out. So anyway, that's what we're dealing with. And we don't want you to be wondering what we teach here. And that is, if you're offended by the virgin birth, you're going to be offended by the teachings of the gospel revolution. If you're offended by a man called Jesus Christ being dead for 3 days and raising from the dead, you're going to be offended with the gospel revolution and Mike Williams Ministries. You'll be offended at Daniel. You'll be offended at me. You'll be offended at everybody that has anything to do with this at all.
And in the words of Don Barris Bartlett, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right.
Oh, he loved doing that. I really saw that was a huge thing for Don to give up. And I saw, boy, there's salvation taking place in this song, you know? And and now here we are trying to quote Don and make him the one who said, we didn't say it, Don said
yeah.
it. So we take advantage of dead people, anything we can do to get the gospel across.
So this week's command, Michael, the next one on this list from this secret website that we have been looking at, and don't worry, it won't be secret forever. We will tell you eventually which group has come up with this list, and we're holding off on that for a reason, and when we expose them, you'll understand why that reason is. But the next command or teaching of Christ here and this is in Matthew chapter 5, is be reconciled, speaking about not reconciliation to God, but rather to your brother. And these are the verses that they use out of Matthew chapter 5 for this teaching. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother has aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First, be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. That's Matthew 5, 23 and 24.
I think the only thing that King James missed is they should have put thou oughtest.
Oughtest.
Oughtest to goest. They missed one. That one was heavy with it, wasn't it?
Yep.
These are verses, and we're only going to have time to go into these couple here. This continues on. But this is all about the teaching. I've taught on this. Have you, Daniel?
Oh, yeah. I actually used to use it during offering time, but I'm not going to tell you about that again.
Yeah, exactly. So we've all taught on this and the importance that it was a little bit of manipulation and control in it, you know, that God, you know, you're giving so that. And how we got down to giving, because this, I guess, because the translated version says gift.
Yeah.
Your gifts and tithes and offerings, we kind of clumped it all into that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what that, in fact, it's not what that means at all. But what we did is reduce this to something that you would personally give at the altar of a church. And that's why our church, we didn't pass around Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets.
Mm-hmm.
You had to come and lay your gift on the altar.
Yeah.
Did you do that, Daniel?
We changed about, because we had a revelation about that. And we then moved the offering plate to the altar and then had the congregation come forward. And
there you go.
You know, half of it was a revelation. Half of it is we couldn't find ushers to work anymore. So Wednesday night, we didn't have any ushers. So we put the plate up so you don't have to have, you know, 3-4 ushers to go through the auditorium.
And you get to embarrass everybody that's not giving.
Exactly.
So what we're going to do is take this commandment. This is a commandment. This isn't a suggestion. And we're going to look at this. It was Jesus's commandment. He didn't, wherever he got it from, it was his. And he gave this commandment. So as we look at this, Daniel, though, it is our view of this, of bringing your money up to the altar and saying, nah, I can't leave my money here right now. You know, I am still... And it says, if your brother is offended at you, right?
Yep.
So it's not somebody you're offended with. It's those that we never were concerned about. And if they're offended with me, that's their problem, right?
Right.
Well, turns out to not be their problem. Turns out to be the person who is offering this gift, whatever it is. So what can we learn here, Daniel? This term is used, more than a dozen times, almost 20 times. And it seems to be pretty clear because we have the entire picture of this happening. So when we go into this, an offering of gifts, this is something that was required by the law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the Greek word for gift here is doron, and it means a present, specifically a sacrifice or gift offering. Now, most of the times in the New Testament, it's translated as offering. As gift. There is one time where it's translated as offering. However, most of the context of most of these 17 verses is sacrifice and offerings. And what we learned about that is the sacrifice was the verb and the offering was the noun. And that was the context of the majority. Now, there were some exceptions, and so I think you have to look to the context about what's being spoken.
Yes, you do.
But I think this one's pretty easy for us to see because it's the gift on the altar. you know, you're not going to bring a gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the altar. Exactly. Now, when we're talking about altar, we're not talking about the front of a church sanctuary. We're talking about the bloody altar in the temple, temple worship altar. That's the group of people Jesus was talking to.
Yeah, we have to realize there was no church at that time. What we relate to, that did not exist. An altar was for a sacrifice. And now, Daniel, could just anybody say, I've got a sacrifice, I'm going to run up and do it? Is there any place that the Hebrew scriptures that Jesus knew very well, was there any place that someone could do that on their own?
No, it was always the priest. And Hebrews is very specific about it in using this term. And in this term, the other word that always shows up is the priest. The priest was involved. So the people brought the offering to the priest, and then the priest did the sacrificing.
Yes. And this wasn't a bag of gold. This was some form of animal sacrifice. Much like what we found out in the book of Acts, when, remember, James ordered Paul to go and offer an offering, and go with these guys and shave your head and offer an offering with them, which is a sacrifice, because it was a purification ceremony, and purification, according to the Hebrew scriptures, was always with an animal sacrifice. So Paul was talked into doing an animal sacrifice, knowing that they had all ceased at the cross. So what are you seeing here that is pretty glaring in light of the fact we know right now, we know two things at this point in what Jesus said. This was before the cross.
Yeah.
Everything that Jesus said was either bringing clarity to the law or bringing an understanding of how things were going to change pretty soon.
You know, one of the things that glares out to me is the fact that even these priests who had done all of the purification and who had the right bloodline and who had the right garments on and had everything. This is one of those things that I think would disqualify every priest from ever being able to offer a sacrifice. Because who doesn't have someone who has offended somebody? I've offended people today, I'm sure, that I'm not even aware of. So what if a priest is up there and someone's offended at the priest and the priest doesn't even know that they're offended? And you might say, well, Daniel, you're being really nitpicky. Well, that's what the law is. The law is very nitpicky. It gets to these very, very details. Just look at this in chapter 5 of Matthew that we're looking at. That's what it gets down to. It gets down right to the heart. If you call someone a fool, might as well murder them. So that's how specific this is getting. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing here, is that in order to offer this gift, not only the bringer of the gift handing it to the priest, everybody involved in that has to get right and has to have complete reconciliation with their brother before they can offer this gift. And again, I don't know of anybody who could ever achieve that state of being.
Well, it's, and I remember back when we were doing this, and I had to tell the folks that you have to go make it right with somebody who don't like you, not the people you don't like. number one, you don't know how many people don't like you. I would never run out of trips I had to make back from that, based on the number of people who are offended by what you and I teach, what the Gospel Revolution represents. They are offended. They're offended actually with the cross. They're offended with Christ. And that's very clear. If you deny the virgin birth and you have gone to speaking to nothing but Father, you're offended by Jesus. And we are not offended by Jesus around here. We're not offended by you referring to when you talk about things that it's Father, Father, or Abba. It's not offensive to us. But it is offensive to many that to give Jesus credit for just about anything except bringing a revelation of what always was before. And that is a lie. I'm not going to tell you that it's wrong or, you know, it's being misinterpreted. It's a lie. And we have to call a lie a lie. Is there any, so I don't see any way anybody can do this. Jesus has once again given people, how do you know who's offended with you?
Mm-hmm. And then let's just take that for example and say, okay, let's say I could come up with a list of reconciliation of people that I need to reconcile to. To what degree do we reconcile? Which brings me to a question for you, Michael, and this is recapping some stuff that we have learned already. But we've looked at the word reconciliation in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Mm-hmm. And to what degree does biblical reconciliation take place, Michael?
Well, we know that God was in Christ reconciling himself to the cosmos and to the whole world. And that term reconciliation means to change mutually.
Mm.
The expectation of reconciliation is that both parties change.
Wow.
See, our friends get upset with us to say that God changed, but the fact of it is, if you use the word reconciliation, you tell me one person who understands reconciliation and not say that it is all, it's both parties that have to change.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in for marriage counseling and you're looking for a reconciliation, don't think that you're going in there and the counselor is going to agree with you that your husband's a deadbeat, and once he gets his life in order, you know, you'll accept him back. The counselor, if they have any sense whatsoever, is going to point out things that both parties need to change.
Mm.
Reconciliation means both parties change.
Wow. I have some people in my life, Michael, that I don't know how convincing I could be with them. I don't think they're going to change their mind about me.
How is that possible, Daniel? Goodness. But it is true. As wonderful as we are, there's people that just aren't going to change their mind about us. The thing that we're first looking at here is that this is not possible.
Mm.
Jesus has given us something to do that is virtually impossible. And here is what we're finding is impossible about this. Number one, if it was you reconciling with people that you had ought against, that's doable.
Right.
But if it's you reconciling with people who have ought against you, that automatically becomes impossible because you don't even know who you've offended.
Mm-hmm. You know that guy you cut off coming out of Burger King this morning?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. How did you know? let's take this, the full brunt of this, for what it is. And it is a teaching that Jesus is making under the law, telling us how that a sacrifice has to be made. Jesus is telling us about how a sacrifice has to be made. First off, the persons that are offended, there must be a cancellation of this. You've got to meet the requirements of the law,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Goodness. If all of the scriptures are about Jesus and Jesus is preaching on the scriptures, what does this have to be about?
Jesus.
Well, how in the world is this about Jesus, Daniel?
What if we kept reading? I wonder what would happen.
One more verse.
Well, let me read 23 and 24 again, then I want to read two more verses. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him. lest your adversary deliver you to the judge. The judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there until you have paid the last penny.
Wow. So this is not just reconciliation. There is a continued understanding of this. Number one, Jesus has given the people he is speaking to something impossible to do. It's not possible to know even who is has aught against you. And then he follows that up with a another requirement.
Agree with your adversary.
Agree with your adversary. Now, if we want to have a good time in that, we could bring that into politics today, right? just go ahead and agree with the other side, because you cannot leave your gift at the altar until whoever you consider adversarial, until you've agreed with it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
Impossible just became utterly impossible. Mm-hmm. This is putting demands on the heart that I know most people's hearts would fail before they would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And, but what could this mean if this is all about Jesus?
If I look at the last part of this, Michael, it talks about, that you won't get out of this prison that your adversary puts you in until you have paid the last penny.
Yeah.
Which means that this gift that was given at the altar wasn't a free will offering.
Mm.
It was a demanded sacrifice that was required.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's what we see through the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And if you look at this whole thing as the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, you'll see that he did it. So he was bringing himself as a gift to the altar. Yeah. But there was a whole world that had aught against him.
Yes.
And if you're
everyone.
Everyone.
Yep.
And if you remember, as he hung on the cross, what were the words that he said before he offered that gift? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
Wow.
A reconciliation took place on the cross. He offered the gift himself, and he agreed, if you will, with the adversary, and that adversary took him to the judge, and the world was judged. He was judged for the world on our behalf. Mm-hmm. He was led into a prison called death and Hades. Yeah. And in that prison, he stayed there until that debt was fully paid. But then up on the grave, he rose.
Yes. Yeah, then we can have church, right? You know, he was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a lamb to the slaughter, he opened not his mouth against his accusers. Yeah. He didn't have a word to speak back. The other thing that is, I think, is very important here is that the very first thing that Jesus took away on the cross was the law. When his body went on the tree, the law went on the tree. Paul is very specific. The prophets were very specific about that, that the body of Jesus Christ, which represented the Adam himself, and also represented the law itself. So when Jesus was nailed to the cross, then the law that would have held offenses between people was taken away. Mm. And forgiveness was offered to everyone that had aught against Jesus before he even took the law away. He met the requirement of that law and then took the law away.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Can we back up here to a second to this website, Michael, because this website doesn't talk anything about this. This website takes these verses and looks at two words, be reconciled, specifically being reconciled to thy brother. They're not talking about sacrifice or anything like that. All they have done, and they have belittled the teaching of Christ down to us finding reconciliation amongst one another, and totally missing the bigger context of what we just went through. Because, to be reconciled to your brother, hey, that's a great thing to live by. I don't want people being angry with me, and I don't want to be angry with people. I want to find that reconciliation in life. But in order for my sacrifice, my altar, my animal sacrifice to be accepted, that's what this is talking about. So if we're going to take the commandment of Christ in its entirety, in a whole here, in these verses, that's what it's talking about, is before you bring that animal sacrifice, you better get right with your brother.
Mm-hmm. And I think that these folks, as we've researched this and read through their statements about this, this is as much for anything, it is to bring you in line with submission to the authorities of this Christian system that they have going. And you just need to be obedient. And if you're not obedient, then you need to go and be reconciled and obey.
Yeah.
Like Daniel said, we're really not trying to toy with you on this. There's a reason that we're withholding where we are getting this information from and what is supplying us this list. But it really is quite amazing by the time we get to the end of this. But you're learning everything that just the opposite to what these people are using this for. You're learning just the opposite of that through the understanding of this man, Christ Jesus, and that he did something. He did something powerful, and even his teachings, his own teachings, were fulfilled at the cross.
Wow. You know, as the pattern that we have been looking at throughout all of these teachings and commandments have been to look at the commandment, to look at the teaching, find out what the Hebrew scripture says. Now, we didn't go to any specific Hebrew scriptures today, but we're talking about it in its entirety, the whole law in itself, the whole sacrificial system that we know of in Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy. That's the whole system that's being represented here in this verse. And then we've looked at a parable, and Jesus is speaking this in a parable, you know, agreeing with your adversary, going to a judge. You know, he's not talking about somebody specifically doing this. It's a picture. It's a parable. Mm-hmm. And until this debt is paid, then you're going to stay in that prison. And what did we see about the parables of Christ? That the parable spoke about Christ, his fulfillment of not only what the Hebrew scriptures prophesied, but also the teachings and commandments of him. And once again, Michael, the pattern has shown true to us, and we found that by accident.
Yeah, we really did. And this is number six of more than two dozen of these, for sure, actually more than three dozen. So we've still got a lot of territory to cover. I hope that you are learning. There is so much going on. I don't know how you're going to keep up, but we certainly are on a trajectory here to go through this entire thing. It is powerful because too many people use the teachings of Jesus as an exit for not thinking.
Mm.
Well, I don't want to think about doctrine. I just follow the teachings of Jesus. We would support you if you were able to, but what you need to come to grips with is what I'm sure these people sat there in front of him just dumbfounded. Be as dumbfounded, at least as they were, knowing that there was no way they could do this. Be as dumbfounded as the rich young ruler who had kept all the six commandments that Jesus said and then made the foolish mistake of asking, what else do I lack? And Jesus went right for his pocketbook. They made it very clear that being a very wealthy man, he went away very sad. Mm. He couldn't do that. All of these teachings are, and these commandments, are designed to lead people to the end of their pursuit of their own righteousness. They are not there to give you a healthy way of living. There's a lot of really great things rather than, so Mike, you're saying we just ought to go around, you know, with, aught in our hearts, against people. And that's quite all right. And see, we've never said that at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, the way you are able to let go of things that people have done to you and not hold against them is to know the love that God lavished upon us. Through this plan that he came up with, and just stop diminishing God's plan. Isn't it amazing, Daniel, that people are going around touting that they're following God's plan for their life, and they won't even accept the plan God had for Jesus' life?
Wow. Well, I don't know about you, but there's freedom in understanding and knowing that I'm not stopping the blessing of God in my life. I'm not stopping the righteousness of God in my life by having aught against someone or them having aught against me. I'm free to enjoy all of the blessing of God, all of his righteousness.
Yes.
And I will forever stand holy, perfect, righteous, sinless, and blameless, no matter what anybody thinks about me. Mm-hmm.
Even enjoy our aughts if we want to, right?
I have to.
You know, and that is the strange thing, is there just doesn't seem to be anything there for it to stick to. I feel like my soul has turned into one of these surfaces. You ever buy those little things for your daughters that stick on the wall and then the thing starts crawling down the wall because it can't stick?
Yeah.
Man, when I found out my grandson had those, I loved those. But, and it looks like it's crawling down the wall because it sticks at first, but it just can't. So the top lets go. And then the next thing you know, it's crawling down the wall. Mm. That sounds weird, but I've just described my soul as that. So, things don't stick with me. Mm. Like they used to, Daniel. It's amazing how quickly I can turn and leave those things without indulging in the thoughts of any retaliation or going to bed mad or any of these things, you know, or getting up mad. And it's not that I can't get angry at what somebody has done. I mean, Daniel caught me down at Burger King today, you know. This is a transformation that is in process. Ethan and I were talking the other day. He said, I don't even like the word progress. And I said, well, why don't you like it? Because he said, because it's measuring us. And I said, well, I'm willing to throw away the word progress with you. Let's try that and see. So what we've been doing is referring to process rather than progress. And it really has made a difference that we see that it's another degree of not judging ourselves, that we're just in the process. But make sure that that process is one that the gospel is bringing you, not one that you are trying to adhere to so that you can get your life straightened out and God bless you because you're doing it right. The only thing that we've been blessed with is the righteousness of God, wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. Mm. That is the blessing. I know it says blessings, blessings, oh, blessings and blessings and blessings. And that's not what the scriptures foretold. That's not what Abraham had, the blessings of Abraham. There are no blessings. It's the blessing of Abraham. We've gone through this with a fine-tooth comb and found out that we are not imputed with the same. It's the same righteousness, but we're not imputed with righteousness like Abraham. We've been made with righteousness. And we've been made wisdom. And therefore, it's not the wisdom of words that brought that to us. It was a life, death, burial, and resurrection that brought us that righteousness, sanctification, wisdom, and redemption. It was a death, burial, and resurrection that brought us that, not what we know. What we know has allowed the process to continue.
Wow. Michael, along that line, maybe we can And as we get prepared to close here, let me quote out of our new religion-free Bible in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Therefore, because God did it this way, you are now in Christ Jesus, by whom God himself made us to be his wisdom, his righteousness, his sanctification, and his redemption. This was never seen before, but it will never end from the cross forward.
That's what I call good news.
Good news. And so it is, we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on whatever platform you are listening. Now it's good night from Daniel Rouse in the frozen tundra.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in Clarksville, Tennessee. Guys, hang in there. This is so amazing. We feel as though after 50 something years of ministry, we're just getting started.
Well, I haven't been in ministry for 50 years, but you have. We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only
with this whippersnapper again.
Just knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. On a weathered off the wild, love's been knocking from within. You are the love you see, a perfect yeah, you. Righteous and holy, yeah. When you're lost and alone, staring at the unknown, and it's worth me to cause the guides you back home. We are one, we are love, we are. Knowing you gotta be nothing to complete, it's not a thing that you need, you're the love. Just remember to breathe and take a second off. Look, I'm just trying to remind you that you're perfectly divine, flawlessly designed. When you're lost and alone, staring at the unknown, that is worth me to come.
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.